thank you.
Okay. How do you know if you would?
I have to remember at the end to press it.
Okay, I want to finish up this Mishnah today, so we can maybe start another Mishnah next time.
Okay.
Truth is, the next shiur will be the last one before Pesach.
Okay.
So instead of starting a new Mishnah, then we probably speak about Pesach. So let's finish this one. We have one rather lengthy idea to mention. And if we don't take the whole time, we'll speak about Purim a little bit.
Oh. Bill is not coming after this. I don't know where you have to go after
now this. I have... on Monday, I'm running from one like a merry-go-round. Rav Yaakov Omer. A mahalach baderech v'shomer. Person's traveling, and he's learning. Umapsik mi mishnaso, and he stops learning, va'omer, and he admires the scenery. Manoa ilanzeh, how beautiful this tree is. Manoa nirzeh, how beautiful this field is. Malo vakosu kilo mischai benafsho. So the Torah considers it as if he is liable to a death penalty. Okay. We've said a few different ideas here. One is that he's walking alone, and it's a dangerous place, and his learning could protect him, and if he stops learning, so he puts himself in danger. Others say that it's because he was learning and stopped learning, even to admire the scenery, which is perhaps a mitzvah, but it doesn't come up to the importance of learning Torah, because he stopped learning Torah. That in itself is what endangers him. Okay. I want to tell you a completely different idea, and I think it fits with something that I heard from my yeshiva, and I think Rav Sham Shum from her says something similar too.
Who's your
Shiva? Rabbi Gifter. So we need a preface, and after the preface, we'll see how it applies over here. There's a medrash. Let's start with this medrash. The medrash, the Gemara says, "Maro Hananya Mishol Vazaria Shehi Pilu Asatzma LeKivshon Haesh." When Hananya Mishol Vazaria were presented with the choice of bowing down to the Tselem of Nebuchadnezzar, or to be thrown into a fiery furnace, they made the choice to be thrown into the fiery furnace. What did they see that gave them the power to do that? So the Gemara says, Donu kal v'chomer me hatzvardim. They made a kal v'chomer from the frogs in Egypt. Frogs in Egypt, it says, some of them went into the ovens when they were being fired up to bake. That means that they basically were willing to do God's bidding, even if it meant that they would be burnt up. And the truth is, in the end, those are the only frogs that survived. So Hananya Mishael Vazariah said, if frogs who don't have any free choice, and don't have reward and punishment, if in order to do God's will, you see that they will throw themselves into a fiery furnace, we who are commanded not to serve idolatry, and we get rewarded and punished, surely have to be willing to sacrifice our life to do God's bidding. So all the Mefarshim there ask, if the halacha is that you have to die rather than serve idolatry, and the Nebuchadnezzar's idol was idolatry, so we have to go with the frogs. There's a halacha, you have to do it. But the frogs make a difference. And if it wasn't required, how did they commit suicide? Right? If you sacrifice your life when it's not necessary, then it's almost like committing suicide. That's the question. There are many answers. But I think one of the answers could be the following. The Medrash says the following. That when the Rabban Shem came to create the world, so he created it with a base, Bereshis. And the Aleph came with a complaint. It's not fair. I'm the first letter. Create the world with me. And if you have a hard time figuring how to do that, God, I can tell you how. Instead of writing the first letter, Bereshis, Bara Elohim, start with Elohim, Bara Bereshis. God created in the beginning, and Elohim starts with Aleph. Not only that, you're starting with God's name. That would be superior. So God said, I'm sorry, but I can't create the world with an aleph. Because aleph stands for order, for curse. And I can't start the world with a curse. I can start with a beis, that stands for baruch. But don't worry. When I come to give the Torah, I'll put you first. Anochi Hashem Elokecha. Start with an aleph. Very difficult. First of all, the aleph could stand for Elohim, not only for Or. The beis can stand for a million other things, not just Baruch. Secondly, and more seriously, if you can't create the world with an aleph because it stands for curse, how do you start the Torah, the Aseres HaDibros, with an aleph? Doesn't it stand for curse? Why isn't that a problem? Creating the world with an aleph is a problem, but giving the Torah with an aleph is not a problem. What I think it means is the following. The Rambam in, now you'll see how we're getting closer to this Mishnah at least. The Rambam in Mishnah Torah explains how does a person come to fear and love God. What's the method of doing it? Says the Rambam, by observing nature. When a person observes nature from the smallest creature to the most complicated, exalted creatures that exist, angels or whatever, he admires the wisdom of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and he wants to know him, and knowledge is getting close to something. So he has a tremendous feeling of love for God and wanting to know and connect himself into this tremendous source of wisdom. And at the same moment, he's taken aback and realizes how small and insignificant he is compared to the rest of creation, let alone to the Ribbono Shel Olam who created it. And that brings him to fear of God. So both loving God and fearing God, a person can come to by observing nature. Okay, and delving into the secrets of nature. The Rambam in Hilchos, in Sefer HaMitzvos, where he delineates all the mitzvahs, there he also speaks about the mitzvah of loving God and fearing God, and he asks the same question. How do you come to love and fear of God? He says, by learning Torah. He says that in the Pasuk. V'yohavtos Hashem Elokecha, how? V'hoyu hadvarim o'ele, asher anochi mitzavcha ayom alevavecha, by learning Torah. So it seems to be a contradiction. Here the Rambam says you come to love and fear of God by delving into nature. And here the Rambam says, by delving into Torah. The answer is that there's no contradiction. Both ways are necessary, and both ways are effective. But you need both of them. And the Rambam in Mishneh Torah, where he speaks about, in a greater detail, right, tells you the one that you wouldn't think of nature. And when it comes to the mitzvah, the main one in fulfilling the mitzvah is learning Torah. But you need both. We'll see in 1 second why you need both. So there are two legitimate paths to come to a recognition of God and to love Him, to want to have a connection with Him and to fear Him, to stand in awe of Him. Nature and Torah. Okay. If that's the case, so when the Ribbono Shel Olam created the world, that's nature, creation of the natural world. And the Ribbono Shel Olam said, even though nature is a way to come to recognize God, to fear Him, to love Him, but there's a danger in that too. That a person could come to through nature to deny God, right? To be so involved in nature to think that nature is a cause of itself, not to see God at all. I always like to give the example of how that's possible. Yuri Gagarin was the first cosmonaut, first human being in space. Okay, the Russians, I remember, in our break in one high school day, right, hearing on the radio that, it was in ninth grade, that Russia had sent a human being into orbit. He orbited the world 3 times, just escaped the gravity, pull of gravity, the gravitational pull of the Earth, went into orbit three times, came back to Earth. And that started the race to the moon, which America won, what's it called, 1969. But that was 1961, I think, something like that. In any case, here's Yuri Gagarin, the first human being in space, gets to look at the Earth from... What did he say when he got out of his Sputnik? He said, "Now I know there is no God." I didn't see him. And that is the most absurd, infantile thing you could imagine. He was put up to say it. I once said this in front of some Russians, and one from Russian said to me, "Yuri Gagarin was a nice guy." And he was forced to say that by the communist government or whatever. They wanted that to be the message. In any case, whatever. I've never met Yuri Gagarin. I don't know. Nice guy, not nice guy, but that's what he said.
What year was this?
1961, I think. So, what did he get out of his tremendous encounter with nature? Kfira. And the truth is, the Torah says that that's a danger. Pentisai necha shamaima. Maybe you'll look up to the heavens. And you'll see the sun, the moon, and the stars. You'll be pushed away from God, and you'll bow down to them. You'll come to idolatry. So the Rambam says, by delving into nature, you come to love and fear of God. The Torah says you come to idolatry. So which is it? The answer is, depends what you're looking for, what your perspective is. If you went into space to see that there's no God, even though that's absurd, because he didn't reach the ceiling. He only got out of the gravitational pull of the Earth. There was a lot above him. Maybe God was up there. I mean, I was expecting to see an old man sitting on a throne. Maybe the throne was floating a few feet above his Sputnik. So it's absurd, but that's what he got from it. On the other hand, there was an Apollo mission. I think it was Apollo, where they didn't land on the moon. This is before the moon landing, where they went and they orbited the moon and came back. And one of those Apollo missions, they broadcast pictures of Earth from space. First time that people on Earth could see what Earth looks like from space, and they did it via satellite to the whole world. I think it was before Krasmach. It was sometime before before their holiday. And before they broadcast these video pictures live from space, they read the Tehillim Perek Yutes. Hashamayim misaprim folkel umaisa yodam agir rakia. That the heavens declare the honor of God and so on. Glory of God. So here are American astronauts who are imbued with a tremendous feeling of recognizing God's wonders and broadcasting to the world a message that here you can see God's glory, and I'm sure they got a reward for that. Tremendous Kiddush Hashem. And here's a Russian, my cosmonaut, that came to Kfira from his experience. What do you see from there? That the same inspiration from nature can lead you to negative or lead you to positive. It depends what your perspective is. So before you delve into nature, you need to get the right perspective. Therefore, Torah has to precede nature. That's what the Medrash says. Medrash says like this: when God created the world, which is nature, he said, "I have to give a perspective, right? I have to give a guidance of how to look at this creation." So I'm going to start with a base for bracha, that you see the blessing in nature and not see the curse. So I'm going to have to guide you, because if I leave it just like this without any guidance, and the aleph you could see, aror, you're going to come to see the curse from nature and leave me out and not see me in nature. On the other hand, the Torah itself, when I come to give the Torah itself gives guidance. If you learn Torah, right, for the sake of Torah, right? It'll guide you. There's a Gemara that says, Halavai osi ozavu. The Rabban Shem says, Halavai, leave me alone. In other words, forget about me. But Torasi Shamaru. Learn my Torah, observe my Torah, and you'll come back to me. Shahamor Shabba Marzalamuta. Because the light of Torah brings a person to the good. Torah has the ability as an internal guidance system. It'll guide you towards the good. Barasi, I created the Yetzer Hara, but I created the Torah to help guide you to use the Yetzer Hara in a positive way and not to use it in a negative way. So when it comes to giving the Torah, we'll understand that the Aleph is Elohim, Anochi, and not Orr. Because the Torah will guide you to that. But when it comes to nature, you need to be guided first, otherwise you can look at nature and get the wrong message. So you always need two paths in serving God. You need to start with Torah to give you the right perspective, and then you need to look at nature, right? And now once you have the guidance of the Torah, the nature will bring you closer to God. What's the purpose? If you're already close to God from the Torah, what do you need nature for? Because we're human beings and we are affected by our senses. Physical things, intellectual things, abstract things are very nice, but they're not as strong an influence and inspiration as physical things. Where do we find that? From the Rishonim, says that Moshe Rabbeinu was given a blow-by-blow description of what was happening at the foot of Har Sinai with the making of the eagle and them dancing around it or whatever. God described to him what was going on. Yet he didn't break the luchos. When did he break the luchos? When he saw what was happening. Says the Sefer HaIkarim, because a person is moved by what he sees. We're human beings, and we are affected by what we see physically. Our senses are what affect us. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu believed 100% what was happening. But to be moved to do something about it, it's only when he saw it. Even a Moshe Rabbeinu needs, and I was thinking also the opposite. He wanted the Jewish people to see him break the luchos, not just to know it intellectually. Where else do we see this idea that a person is affected by what he sees much more than what he knows? We know that one of the reasons that the Rabban Shem brought the plague of darkness in Mitzrayim was because many Jews had to die. And because they weren't fit to be taken out of Egypt, they had totally disassociated themselves from the Jewish people, they considered themselves total Egyptians, and they had to die in Mitzrayim. They couldn't go out. According to one opinion, 4/5 of the Jewish people died in Mitzrayim. Only 1/5 went out. So therefore the Rabban Shem said, I don't want Paro to see Jews dying en masse, because he'll say, oh, you see, it's not just me, they're also dying, so it's not God's not punishing me or whatever. So he did it under the cover of darkness. During the days of darkness, the Jews died. Now, I would understand if a few Jews died, and before the lights went out, right, these 10 Jews were alive, and then the lights went out, and 10 Jews died, and the lights went on, so Paro wouldn't realize 10 Jews are missing. But we're talking about 4/5 of the Jewish people, right? So before the lights went out, there were 3 million men between 20 and 60 in Mitzrayim. The lights go out, 4/5 of them die. The lights go on, there's only 600,000 men between 20 and 60 left. And the cemeteries are full of new graves. You don't have to be too smart to understand what happened. So what did God benefit by killing these Jews under the cover of darkness, when in the end, Paro's going to obviously deduce what happened? The answer is, deducing something intellectually does not make the same impressions if you see it happening. You see it, makes an impression. You hear about it, you deduce it, doesn't make the same impression. So, therefore, in addition to the Torah, which is the foundation of all creation, the letters of the Torah is what God used to create this physical world. The physical world is a physical representation of what the Torah is in the spiritual sense. But unless you see it physically, it doesn't make that much of an impression. Seeing something, seeing God's will in nature, makes more of an impression on a person than learning about it Torah-wise, abstract, intellectually. So therefore, you need both. You need the Torah to begin with to give you direction, how to look at nature, and then you need to look at nature in order to be more impressed because you see something concrete. You can sense it with your senses, with your five senses. That's what we started with. Hananya, Mishael, Azariah knew the halacha, that you have to throw yourself into a fiery furnace rather than serve idolatry. But what gave them the ability to do it that inspired them to be able to overcome their natural desire to continue to exist and be willing to do that? They saw that that existed in nature. They saw it real. They saw it as something they could sense with their senses by looking at the frogs, right? We relive Yetzias Mitzrayim, so when they saw it in the Torah, right, that the frogs did it, it was something they could relate to with their senses, not just intellectually. So that's what moved them to actually do it, even though they knew what the halacha was. But you need something to inspire you to fulfill that. It's not easy to jump into a fiery furnace. So they needed something that would affect their five senses. With this idea, so that's why the Rambam says you need both paths. You need the Torah first to give you the right perspective, and then you need to supplement it with nature in order to be more inspiring and more real in a concrete way. With that, I want to explain two things. One, so Torah is always the Aleph, and the Bria, nature, is always the base. That's what it means. Torah was given with an Aleph, because that's Elohim. You'll see God. The Torah will guide you. And the Bria was created with a base, because you need to be guided to see the blessing, not the curse.
And therefore we need to start with the Aleph.
Right.
With Torah, and then with
the
Right,
exactly. Base. Where do we see that? Two places.
Okay.
We say every day Kriya Shema, twice a day. And there are two brachos that precede the Kriya Shema morning and evening. The first bracha, both morning and evening, deals with nature. Yotzer Oru Vorich Hoshech Oseh Shalom speaks about the angels, all the different things in nature. Same thing at night. Asher B'dvaro Mariv Aravim speaks about nature. Day, night, and the stars, and so on. The second bracha deals with Torah. Ava Solam, or Ava Rabba, right, deals with learning Torah. In fact, you can, if you forget to say Birchas HaTorah, you can fulfill the bracha of Torah with Ava Rabba, or Ava Solam. Okay. So we have two brachas that precede Shema. One that deals with nature, and one that deals with Torah. Why? Because the mitzvah of Shema is the mitzvah of love of God. And in order to reach that love, you need two paths, Torah and nature. Now, even though nature came first, because the Torah wasn't given till after the world was created, even though it existed before, but vis-a-vis us, the creation of the world preceded the giving of the Torah. So the bracha nature comes first, and the bracha of Torah comes second, chronologically. But the bracha on nature starts with what letter? Beis, Baruch Atah Hashem. And the bracha on Torah starts with what letter? Aleph, Ava Rabba, Aleph. Here's again. You need two paths. Path of nature and the path of Torah. Torah has to be the Aleph, and the Bria has to be the base, the nature of the base. Where else do we find that? In a custom that's still preserved in many kehilos, not too many, mostly in Yeki kehilos, they preserve the minig of saying Borchi Nafshi in the winter between Mincha and Mariv on Shabbos and Pirkei Avos in the summer. Pirkei Avos has been universally adopted and kept, that everybody learns Pirkei Avos in the summer. But they recite Borchi Nafshi in the winter and Pirkei Avos in the summer, and the cutoff dates are Shabbos Shuva, where you don't do either one, Shabbos Shuva you have a drasha, and Shabbos HaGadol. So up until Shabbos HaGadol, you say Borchi Nafshi. After Pesach, you start with Pirkei Avos. And then in the winter, after Shabbos Shuva, till Shabbos Shuva, you say Pirkei Avos. And then afterwards, you start Borchi Nafshi again. I was thinking, why? Why is this the custom? The time of the week which is relegated to really come to love of God is Shabbos. One of the aspects of Shabbos is Shabbos was given with love, and Shabbos leads a Jew to have love of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That's why when a Yontif falls on a weekday, we don't say Bi'avav. Asitein lanu asyom zchag ha-matzos hazeh, we don't say Bi'avav. Yom, what's it called? But when it falls on Shabbos, we say Vatiten lanu zchag ha-matzos hazeh zman cheruseinu Bi'avav. Because Shabbos is the epitome of love of Hashem. Now the time of Shabbos that is the zenith of that time that is potentially brings a person to love of Hashem is between Mincha and Maariv on Shabbos, Shalosh Shuvos time. Shalosh Shuvos time is called Rava D'Ravin. It's the most intense will and favor that God has for the Jewish people is expressed during that time of the day on Shabbos. Rava D'Ravin. So, therefore, since Shabbos afternoon is the time to reach Avas Hashem, and we said you always need two paths to reach Avas Hashem. You need nature and you need Torah. So now, in the winter, when the nights are long, but nature is hibernating, Torah, the path of Torah, is at its height, because the main time of learning Torah is at night. So the path of Torah is at its high point, because the nights are long. But the path of nature is at its low ebb, because everything's hibernating. So since you always need two paths to reach that love of Hashem, which is the ideal time, is Shalosh Shuvos time. So that time on Shabbos, in the winter, we supplement the path of nature by saying Borchi Nafshi. Borchi Nafshi deals with all of nature. So we supplement the path of nature to the path of Torah, because the path of nature is at its low ebb, because nature is hibernating. In the summer, it's just the opposite. The nights are short, so Torah is at its low ebb. But nature is in full bloom. So then we have to supplement the path of Torah to the path of nature. Nature's there. Torah needs to be supplemented. Pirkei Avos deals with learning Torah and the importance of learning Torah. So we supplement Pirkei Avos in the summer to nature, which is obvious anyway. We supplement nature in the winter to Torah, which is at its high ebb, because nature is hibernating. Borchi Nafshi, which is nature, starts with a base. And Avos starts with an aleph. It's not Pirkei Avos, it's Maseches Avos. Avos is an aleph. So here again, the Torah is the aleph, and the nature is the base. Based on that, I want to say the meaning of this mission is the following. Person's learning Torah. He's traveling, he's learning Torah. And he stops learning Torah to admire nature. The problem isn't that he stopped learning Torah per se. That person take a rest, or take a break for a second, and it not only takes a break, but he's admiring nature. The problem is that he considers admiring nature not a continuation of Torah. He feels it's something different. It's not Torah. It's he's mafsik mitoraso. He makes a clear separation between Torah and nature.
But if he admires nature in reference to his learning,
right, that is a different story. Right. In other words, if he would understand that viewing nature has to be a continuation from Torah. Torah gives you an appreciation of the Ribbono Shel Olam, whatever, and then you can look and see it in nature. So you're not stopping to learn, you're continuing your learning on a different path, but that's a continuation of your learning. But if you consider studying nature, something totally separate from Torah, then there's a danger that if nature is separated from Torah, then it's going to lead you the wrong way. So that's the problem. You're walking, you're learning. So what's it called? Since you're not learning kavua, you're not sitting in the base medrash and getting up and stopping, but you need a little bit of a rest. Anyway, the Torah is not, and now you observe nature. So if you consider that a continuation of your Torah now is guiding you how to look at nature, so you're not stopping learning, you're just directing your learning into nature now, then that's fine. But if you consider admiring nature something totally separate from your learning, there's learning Torah and then there's nature, then nature is a very dangerous thing because it may lead you away from the Rabbanu Shalom. So the problem over here is umafsik, not that you're stopping to learn, but you consider the admiration of nature a total
separate thing.
Totally separate from Torah learning, that's the problem.
And then you stop doing mitzvot, and then you're a rasha, and a rasha is dead already by his life.
That in itself is something that's going to lead you to very bad consequences, which will take away your spiritual life. I think that's a reasonable pshat in the Mishnah, completely different than all the other pshatim. Right? The other ones are either you're liable for stopping to learn, or you're liable for what's it called, because you're in a dangerous place and you need the learning to protect you. Here we're saying it's not stopping to learn that's a problem, and it's not that you're in a dangerous place and you should be learning Torah, but it's how you look at nature. If you look at nature as a continuation through the eyes of Torah, then nature could be a mitzvah too. If you look at nature as something totally separate from Torah, it's a separate regimen completely, then your problems. That's the.
I like the examples you gave about the cosmonaut. 1960, you were in ninth grade.
As you're 61, couldn't have been in ninth grade. I was in probably seventh or eighth grade, because I graduated. I graduated high school
in
65.
Oh, so you're born.
Because 65 was already
that.
In Tells.
Did you notice that when he said it, or is it from your learning later on?
We were so excited that, you know, somebody went into space or whatever. Then we thought the Russians were going to shoot missiles with atomic bombs against America. That was when everybody was building bomb shelters and storing food, and it was a panic that the missile, wasn't that around then, 59, 60? With the missile crisis.
One was Cuba?
Kennedy. When they just thought the world was on the verge of an atomic war.
Why does the Mishnah bring in both the bird and the tree?
Why both of them? So it could be that the trees, there's something special about a person's like a tree. Right? And the ground, right, is something that a person sees the potential. So even those things, right?
The tree is
right.
The bird flies around.
Not the bird. That's a bird. It's a near. Near is a plowed field.
Oh.
So both of them can really inspire a person, right? Because people are like trees, and people are created from the ground in order that we should bring out our potential, just like the ground can bring out potential of many things. Even so, if you don't have a Torah perspective, both of those things can lead you. You can make an asherah from a tree, and the ground you can use for bringing out not good things but weeds and poison things. So those two things, I would think, at least can guide you even without the Torah to positive things. No, without the Torah, even that can guide you to something negative. Both of them.
And depends what you're looking for.
Exactly. Depends what you're, again, they tell a story that about this idea. They once brought an art expert to the Louvre in Paris, right, to see the beautiful, and he takes a look at one painting and he says, that looks like sour milk. He figured, look, he's the expert, you know. We thought it's a nice painting, but took him to the next painting, said the same thing, looks like sour milk. They said, you know, maybe he's not looking from the right angle, maybe there's not enough lighting. They put on the lights, they took him back, same thing. Suddenly somebody goes over, takes off his glasses, and all over the glasses is sour milk. Cleans off the glasses, and now he's able to see the painting. Depends what's on your lenses. Right? What lenses you're looking through. If your lenses have sour milk, everything looks like sour milk. If your lenses are crooked, right, and colored, you see everything the way that your lenses are. They're rose-colored, you see everything rose-colored. They're black, you see everything black. That's how people look at things. Right? They're affected by their perspective. Right? Two people can see the exact same thing, and one sees it from his perspective, and it's terrible. And another one sees it from his perspective, and it's very nice.
I had an exact experience at a cousin's chasana. Right? And it was a chasidish chasana. And staying with my mother, and the chasan breaks the glass with his foot, and he grabs the caller's hand. And someone said, look at the love in his eyes for his collar. And the other person said, look at that disgusting hatred in his eyes for his collar. It's not weird. It's not normal when he's looking at his collar. Wait a second. And my late brother, Rabbi Schwartz, he was at that customer too.
Yeah.
And he saw it with the hatred thing, but he didn't want to say anything. But what he did was he walked out of the chuppah room, and as we got to discussing it later, he didn't like what he saw, the way the chassan looked at the kallah. And the other person told me, liked what they saw. A few weeks later, they were divorced.
Right.
And my brother-in-law was right.
He had the right perspective.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Rabbi Akiva, when they walked to Temple
exactly.
Mount, and,
how you see things, right, exactly.
Fox,
you're laughing or you're crying. Okay, you have to get to the next shiur. Mir Sashem, next week there will be a shiur, and after that, until after Pesach. You can send me that, if it works, you can send me that file, I'd appreciate it. To zevlef@gmail.com. No tab-